Hey friends, it's Jamie Grace and welcome to my YouTube channel if you're watching this, and a welcome to the Jamie Grace podcast if you're listening to this. Today is, today is a very different episode of both my podcast and a very different style of video, something I don't do often, but it's kind of like just like really long and extended and not very edited, but we're going to talk about Tourette syndrome and anxiety, mental health, ADHD, OCD, all that stuff combined with like pregnancy, friendships, relationships, marriage, and faith as well. So I'm going to dig pretty deep into my life here and try to answer as many of your questions as possible. Thank you so much to everybody that did send in a question. I've been honored to like be able to talk about this stuff for like 16, 17 years now. I was diagnosed with Tourette syndrome, OCD, ADHD, and anxiety when I was 11 years old. Symptoms really kicked in at 9 years old, and now I'm 27. That was the weirdest way to explain a timeline. Welcome to my brain. If you're wondering what this is going to be like, that's what it's going to be like. Kind of confusing, but makes sense to me. But yeah, so I've been like advocating and like raising awareness for these things for a long time, but I've not yet really done like a video like this where it's just kind of all the stuffs. And so thank you guys for sending in your questions. On the screen, if you're watching this, or in the show notes, if you're listening to this, you can go ahead and look and see like a table of contents, and you can skip ahead if you want. I'm not offended if you guys want to do that. I also want to make sure you guys know that I'm not a doctor. I do have a bachelor's in child and youth development, and so some of the things that I say might come from that perspective. I was in kids ministry for like 10 years, and I've trained teachers and taught teachers as well. And so some of the stuff I say may come from that perspective, but for the most part, this is all just my personal experience, personal research that I've done. And so at the end of it all, like, just don't consider this to replace an actual like doctor's visit or something like that. So let's just jump right into it. I didn't put this person's name, but they said, how do you get properly tested for any mental illness? I feel like I may have anxiety issues or something else more serious because my body is starting to twitch. So with Tourette's, OCD, ADHD, and anxiety, all this stuff, any other condition that you can think of, it can oftentimes be really difficult to get a diagnosis. And the reason why I say that up front is because I just don't want anybody to be discouraged on their journey or overwhelmed on their journey. You are going to have to become your biggest advocate. Even if you have the most amazing doctors in the world, like, you still gotta put in the work. It becomes like, if you have any of these conditions, it can become like a part-time job, if not a full-time job, just trying to figure out what medications work the best for you, what treatment works the best, what plans work the best for you. And if you're a parent, then I would definitely say that for in regards to your child. So yeah, I'm really grateful that my parents, like, oh, sorry, I'm so out of breath, so pregnant. I'm really grateful that my parents really became my advocates, and that they made so many sacrifices to just go to doctor after doctor and figure out what was going on. And so if you are having symptoms that you're unsure about, or your child is having symptoms, I would say a primary care doctor can be a great place to go, but a neurologist or a psychologist is what I would recommend as far as getting started. And oftentimes your primary care doctor can refer you to one of those things. So the next question, Chloe Lacey 7 says, does it bother you when people say things like, I'm so OCD, when they don't actually have the illness? I have diagnosed OCD and bipolar, and it drives me bonkers when people make statements like that. Yes, it 100% drives me crazy. I just tweeted about this about a week ago. You know, I totally understand that there are moments where you may feel distracted and you may feel like, oh, I have ADHD in this moment, or you may feel frustrated and you think, oh, I have anxiety or depression, I'm so depressed in this moment. But I think that those are really harmful phrases to use when you're not actually referring to the condition and you're just referring to an expression. And so if you feel the need to tie your shoes more than once a day and you don't actually think you have OCD, a lot of us in this community, I can't speak for everyone, but a lot of us would prefer that you just said, I want to tie my shoes again, instead of saying, I'm so OCD. Because not only does and make it to where like people don't take us seriously when we talk about the complexities of our condition. But also when we do have quirks that aren't as serious, then it just makes it way more confusing for us to explain it to our friends and loved ones. And it's just very unfair and kind of insensitive to say something like that. Okay, so the next thing is medication and treatment. Davis HD says, David HD 32, that's confusing. I don't know why. That was really easy to read, but okay. How do you feel about medication for any of these conditions? Have you ever been on medication for them? Hope this isn't too personal. Jay Seaborn says, she'd like to hear my thoughts on medication versus supplements. She has ADHD and has gone back and forth whether or not like what to do. And Audless Port says, do you take medication for any of these or do you do natural homeopathic supplements? I've tried a whole lot of different stuff. I've tried a lot of different stuff. I was very heavily medicated on like prescribed stuff from a doctor, ages 9 to 15. It was my choice to step away from those. I went to college at 16 years old. And so right when I was about 15, I wanted to try to get off of all the medication that I could and see if I could go to college without it. And I did. And it was really hard. And then I got back on medication in my early 20s. I was having a really difficult time with my work situation at the time. So I've tried medication. I've changed my diet. I've tried to do like dairy-free. I've tried to do gluten-free. I've done different vitamins and supplements instead of pills in general. I've tried multi-level marketing companies that focus on gut health. I've tried essential oils. I've tried a lot of different stuff. As far as right now, my main course of support for me is counseling and talk therapy with a psychologist. That is my main focus right now. And then just some other different lifestyle changes. Like I do wear a mouthpiece that helps with Tourette syndrome. You can watch a video on that by looking in the description of this. I don't think that there is a right or wrong. I don't ever say the names of the medications that I tried or the names of the vitamins that I tried. Honestly, the reason why I don't do that is because everyone is so different. And I think it'd be really unfair for me to come out and say, this is the best medicine or this is the worst medicine if someone else had a totally different experience with it. And so, like I was saying, it kind of becomes a part-time, if not a full-time job of advocating for you or for your child, if we're talking about your child, because it really is just there's a lot of stuff. And at the end of this, I'm actually going to go through a list of like strategies that I use that actually help with my ADHD, my Tourette syndrome, my OCD, and my anxiety. And so stay tuned for the end of this because I'm just going to list them off really fast as far as the stuff that I do on a daily basis that does help me manage. But the main thing is counseling right now. Pregnancy and relationships. Okay, that's the category of these next couple of questions. Curly Gal V says, do you get concerned about possibly passing it on to your children? You know, I actually never thought about that until I was like in middle or I was in high school and someone actually said to me, like to not mention it when I was dating. I wasn't dating then, but they were just giving me a heads up. I guess they thought that that was what I needed to hear. And they were saying to not talk about it because I didn't want to scare my like future spouse about what our children could have. And that was like the first time where I was like, wait, like are people going to not like, you know, are people going to be scared like that I could pass this on to my kids? It's always been difficult. It's always been challenging for me, but I was never scared about passing it on to my kids, if that made sense. I think because my parents have always been so like supportive and like honest about the things that they've struggled with in their teen years when I was a teenager and stuff like that, I realized how impactful their experiences were in my life that I think if my child is going to go through something, which all people go through things, even though it already makes me want to cry, just thinking about our daughter like scraping her knee on her, like from falling off a bike, it just makes me want to cry. But knowing that she's going to go through something, if I have the tools and the means to be able to sit with her and say, I understand, I've been there, I get it, like that's a privilege to me. I'm not saying that I want her or any of our kids to have the same struggles that I do, but if I'm able to relate to them, I'll honestly see that as a privilege. And yeah, we'll cross that road when we get there. Miss Shauna says, oh yeah, it's like, I think it's like a 50% chance that our kids, like any kid that we have biologically, that they will have Tourette syndrome. So, I mean, I think I've just always kind of just been prepared for it. And I've been around a lot of kids that have Tourette's, and I've like, there's no S at the end, Tourette. And I've like, mentored a lot of kids in their early stages of diagnosis. And so, I think I'm just, my brain is just like, okay, Lord, like whatever. I've never been one to like over fantasize a healthy child, if that makes sense, because I was never a healthy child. And so when people were saying, do you want a boy or a girl? And I would say, oh, I don't care. They would say, oh, do you just want it to be healthy? And I'm like, well, yes, obviously that's ideal. Like, don't get me wrong. That's like dream scenario. But when you have a disability yourself, you don't idolize health as like the good people, if that makes sense, because there's no good or bad. This is just your normal. Okay. Miss Shauna says, how does the Tourette syndrome, or how does Tourette affect your marriage, or does it affect your marriage? Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have, like, it's not like a, like, it's not like a negative impact on our marriage in the context of like it's like, I don't know what kind of example I can think of. Like, just like say, well, I don't want to like compare it to anything because I don't want to be rude to somebody that's struggling with something. But yeah, so Tourette syndrome it's a medical condition, right? And so anybody that's like sick, like that's a part of our wedding vows and sickness and in health. So he signed up for this. but yeah, I mean, it doesn't have a negative impact on our marriage, but it is difficult. Like it's difficult in any aspect of my life. It's something that I deal with, and something that I'm grateful that I have a husband who is so patient and compassionate, and he's so like, I mean, the cliche of like communication that you always hear about marriage, like, oh, it's about communication. He's so pro communication, and I'm so pro communication that it really helps, because if I am having a bad day or if I need to explain something that I'm like, you know, I don't know, like sometimes I'll think of things that have to do with my Tourette that I'm like, oh, I haven't even explained this to you because it's such a part of my normal that I didn't think to explain it to you. And he's so like eager to sit there and listen to what it is that I have to say and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's hard to like say, like it hasn't made it challenging for our marriage, but it's just, it's a hurdle that I have, like, it's just a challenge in my life, if that makes sense, because it's a medical challenge. And it's just something that I'd say that if you're considering marrying someone with mental health complications, or with medical complications, or if you want to get married and you have that stuff, just communication is key. Like it really, really is. Like, don't be afraid to talk all the time. And just, yeah, I'd say what's probably harder than like, well, I'd say probably one of the hardest things was like letting him see my tics, because it's something that I've gotten so conditioned. I've gotten so good at hiding it. Like I'm like really good at hiding it, which I should not be, but we'll get into that later. So that was hard. Like just even like when we were engaged, like I was like, dang, he's probably gonna need to figure this out at some point, so he's not like startled at home one day, you know. So yeah, like that has been hard, and then the anxiety part of it all. But again, I'm very pro counseling. I've been going to a counselor since like 2000. I don't know. So I was in college, and I've been out of college for like 6 years, 8 years. Seven. Yeah, I've been out of college for 7 years. So I've been in like with different counselors for a long time, and so just like communication is really key, and keeping him updated on my updates of my health journey and my mental health journey is really key. Always Kayla says, is it challenging having Tourette syndrome and being pregnant? What advice could you give someone wanting to start a family but worried about their disorder? I mean, yeah, it is challenging, you know, being pregnant and having Tourette syndrome, but also sometimes I'm not sure which one's more difficult, if it's the anxiety or if it's the Tourette when it comes to pregnancy. OCD and ADHD, for me personally, they haven't really affected my pregnancy. But Tourette syndrome, as far as like my physical tics, there are certain tics that I just cannot do. And so there have been nights where I've just been kind of just distraught, to be honest, because it's like, So holding in a tick, essentially, it's like you can only hold it in for so long, and then eventually you have to let it out. And so the kind of terms that they might use in this community, they would say like suppressing your ticks at school. And then when you get home from school, you tick away. So your friends at school might be like, you don't have Tourette's. I've never seen you, whatever. And then you get home and then your parents are like, wow, you've been holding that in all day, haven't you? And so to like have certain tics that I physically cannot do, and then some that like would be harmful to the little one, that is really hard because it just, it's like I'm suppressing it so long. And so it's just caused me to have to like, I mean, honestly, just cry a lot. And like, I'm not trying to like make this sad or anything, but it is, that's just like a tiny little glimpse of the answer to that question. It's been really difficult, but yeah, I mean, I just try to like be patient with myself and have grace for myself and like accept that it's okay to say that this is hard. You know, I'm having a very physically healthy pregnancy. But with that being said, before I was pregnant, I was not very physically healthy. And so, just trying to balance that. Right. And then the anxiety as well. Yeah. It's just the same thing. I'm just having to just stay on top of like counseling and, my accountability and my mom and my dad, but my mom was a homeschool mom, so I was with her all the time. And, she was my advocate growing up with my health. And so I keep an open line of communication with her. I haven't had like really, really bad days, or haven't had this to happen more than once, but there was just one day where my husband actually called my mom and he was like, she needs you. So they have an open line of communication if needed. And I'm just really grateful for that and appreciative of that. And it takes humility for sure. You know, it's hard to be able to say like, oh, my anxiety is to a point where I need my husband to call my mommy. You know, that takes letting go of your pride, but I'm grateful that I have a good support system. And as far as advice, that's what I would say. Have a great support system. Have lots of conversations with your doctors and stuff. And be okay with things being different for you. Like, not to like be TMI or anything, but something that I always dreamt of. And like a lot of people might comment down below and give their opinions and stuff. And I love you guys, but just letting you know that this cannot change. Like no one's opinion could ever change. My health has to come first. I always dreamt of like the whole like natural childbirth thing because I just thought for so many different reasons, I really wanted to do that. And we realized early in my pregnancy that because of my complications with my health, that's not an option for me. And so if I could give anyone advice about starting a family, it would be acknowledge what your options are and be okay with that. And don't feel like you're less of a mom. Don't feel like you're less of a person because you're not capable of doing what other people are able to do. Like it doesn't make you less of a person. It just makes you your own person. And that's okay. I'm still kind of telling myself that as I'm saying it. That was really massive, like arm swoops that I was doing. Okay. A couple more questions about relationships. So Nuggets for FIFA, okay, says, how will you guys approach this issue? If you guys could hear that sound, that was me moving my foot. I wasn't like passing gas. It was like my foot against this chair. How would you approach the issue if you notice your child has symptoms? Have you spoken about it? Each child is unique, but is there at least a rough game plan? Yeah, I would say rough game plan is the very key point of all of this because we can't exactly like, you know exactly what this kid's going to be like and like what parenting is going to be like. Our game plan is honestly just kind of just putting our family first. And, you know, first and foremost, we have to work on being the best people that we can be individually. And then we have to serve each other. We choose to serve each other rather, to make sure that we're creating a beautiful marriage and a foundation for our family. And then like after that, then our kids, it's like whatever we got to do to make sure that we are raising the most incredible people. And so we have the mindset that if we have a child that's allergic to California weather, you know, then we have to move, even though we love California. We have the mindset that if we have a child that needs the hospital in Minnesota or Florida, then that's where we got to go. And so that's kind of our rough game plan, if that makes sense. You know, I do think if parents do see symptoms in their child, again, go to the pediatrician and try to get a referral for a psychologist or a neurologist, join some online support groups and start doing some research and staying up late, reading books and articles and watching videos and trying to figure out as much as you can about it. But yeah, that's our rough game plan. It's just, we really care about our family and we're grateful that God has given us this family. And so we just want to use the tools that he's given us to do whatever we got to do to make sure our family comes first. Morgan Jane 2004 says, how do you open up and share your struggles to someone for the first time? You know, this is a very broad question. I could probably do a completely separate video on this, but I think it just depends because I think a lot of times we might have a lot on our chest, especially if you have like anxiety or ADHD and you really feel like you just want to get it all out and you just want to tell everyone everything that's going on. And even though I literally make YouTube videos telling everybody a lot of what's going on, I will tell you that everybody doesn't have to know everything. Having your support system understand everything is a beautiful thing. But you don't have to feel that pressure to tell everybody every little detail because this is your life. And those are, you know, the tics or the medication, you know, when your medication changes and stuff like that, like you don't have to feel obligated to let everyone know that stuff. I would almost say that for the most part, the people that you're going to feel comfortable sharing that stuff with, you know, your family members, your few close friends, your mentor, counselor, whoever that might be, like they'll create that safe space, right? But if you have to kind of push those walls down, like push that person's wall down and be like, please listen, please hear. I just want you to care. I just want you to understand. Then that might not be the person that needs to understand. That might not be the person that needs to know everything that's going on. Now, if this is like a close friend or family member or something like that, you know, it is really hard to let that wall down and to be vulnerable and to be honest. And so I would just say, you know, like to just maybe write it down in a letter first, write down everything you want to say, try to keep it to a couple pages long, read it over and over again, get comfortable with it, and then throw the letter away and go talk to him, you know, like just kind of get an understanding of what you want to say and how you want to say it. And then if you're not able, like say it's possible that maybe you just got diagnosed or something, or you just realize that this is a struggle for you. Maybe you're not able to say it yet. So maybe you do write them a letter, or maybe you send them a video that, you know, seems very much like your life and you think that they'll understand it better that way. Maybe you find a good movie, a good resource that says like, just kind of relates to your life and you say, hey, will you please watch this movie with me? So I think that, you know, there's other creative ways to talk to people and let them know what's going on. I know for me, like I actually like wrote like a full, like 5 or 6 page like thingamabob about anxiety. And I actually took it to my counselor and we read through the like most important parts or whatnot. And that was really helpful. So that could be something that could be helpful for you. Okay. Last question in the relationships department. So how did you deal with telling people about it or when they found out? And that's from Anna Betsy. Yeah. I mean, for me, like, now, sometimes my Tourette syndrome can be a lot more subtle because I am getting a little bit older and it just kind of can get better as you get older. And then also my mouthpiece has helped me tremendously. But for the most part, it was never a secret. Like you could hear me coming from a mile away. You could see me coming from a mile away. So I was like, people knew something was up. And I'm going to be real. Some people, I feel like that was not, you couldn't hear that at all. I'm going to be real. Some people did not receive it well. Some people chose to bully me about it, pick on me about it, mimic me, mock me. That was what they chose to do. And so it took me a while to get to this point, but at some point I just had to realize like not everybody's going to be as loving and accepting about this as I would hope. And so, thank you for showing me your true colors. Have a great weekend. That's just kind of the mindset that I had to develop, to be honest. It took a while to develop it, but it just was. And again, about the support system thing, I had to understand that like my support system doesn't have to be the biggest neighborhood or so, like, you know, it doesn't have to be as big as a city or a state. It could be the size of a small village or enough people that only fit in one car, you know? it's okay to have a small support system. It doesn't mean that you have to like be mean to other people in the world, but it's okay to realize that like, man, there's only five or six people in my life that get it, or that try to get it, or that try to care, or that don't laugh about it all the time. And that's okay. Just stick close to those people. Okay, so the next category is anxiety. And ADN at 332 says, how do you think your anxiety will affect you as a parent? I worry about that for myself. I love your question because it is very quintessential. I have anxiety. It's like, I worry about this. I get it. I worry about it too. I don't know how it's going to affect me as a parent. I do think it's going to be difficult. I can't stress this enough. Support system, please. Counseling, please. Like, try to, and I'm going to put some resources how to like find a local counselor and stuff, but yeah, I mean, just, you can't really plan for that kind of stuff. It's really difficult to know how it's going to affect me as a parent. But I do know that sometimes I can become anxious about things more than other people. And so one thing that Aaron and I do a lot, my husband, we talk through scenarios all the time, like all the time. And we both love it. And it's been really helpful for us. We talk through small scenarios down to like, hey, if we were out at this restaurant and our kids are this age, and this age, which kids order for themselves and which kids do we order for? And I know to some people that's like, why are y'all talking about that? But for both of us, because we just love kids, it's fun. But then for me, it really helps me to be able to say like, this could happen. What are we going to do about it? And we have way more dramatic scenarios that we talk through as well. So I don't know how anxiety will affect me as a parent. But I know what my goals are, and I know what our family's core values are. And I know that I'm continuing to work hard at bettering myself. And right now that's the best that I can do. The Classy Knick Knack Show says, how do you deal with anxiety and be in the entertainment industry? Well, I mean, it's really difficult sometimes because this job is very, like, very unknown, if that makes sense. Like, I could be home, sleep 1 minute, and then like 10 minutes later, I get a phone call. Hey, can you hop on a plane and fly to New York? You've got an interview at 8 a.m. You know, it's hard having anxiety in this condition because it can be very demanding and very uncertain. Even when things feel very certain, it can just be really overwhelming and it can have a lot going on at one time. But honestly, like, I know I keep saying the same. It's like every question has almost the same answer, but my manager is like my biggest support and she happens to be my mom. And I've had a lot of people say, your mom doesn't need to be your manager. And I'm like, y'all don't know how much she's blessed my life. You know, she knows me better than anybody else. She has my best interest. And there have been times where she knows that I have a work commitment coming up. And so she's able to check in on my mental health in a way that, whether she's my mom or not, it's just because our relationship as manager and client is solid. I need her. I appreciate her. And so, just having those people, and I have mentors in the industry, two ladies in particular that I can think of, I won't name them, but they, one is in kind of the mainstream acting world and then one's more in the mainstream music world, and they can both hold me accountable for so many things. Like if I tweet something that seems a little too stressed out, or if I just have a really busy tour schedule and they're just like, yo, I've been on your website, I'm calling you tonight at 11 o'clock. You're going to answer. We're going to talk. It's really imperative to just have people around you, because we see all the time, like, how the entertainment industry can affect your mental health, whether you have a diagnosed condition or not. And sometimes you have to step away from opportunities that may seem like the right opportunity, but they're not. Sometimes you have to step away from relationships that may seem like they were going to be the best of the best, and they were not. And it's hard, it's frustrating, and it can be kind of like, you feel like you're starting over sometimes, but when your health is at the core of it all, at the forefront rather, and then when your goals are still being met as far as like wanting to reach people and wanting to love on people and wanting to share joy and share encouragement with people, like, that's what's most important. I'm gonna like move in my chair. Okay. Next question. Il Campo said, how to control negative thoughts about yourself. So something that I started doing I journal a lot and I write in my phone a lot. And whether I actually journal this or whether I say it out loud, I like to journal it because I like to be able to go back and read it when I need to. I usually write down what the negative thought is, and then I write a sentence right under it or say it out loud if I'm not writing, of what the truth is. And so, like there, I might write something like, I feel like they don't like me. And then like, and I'll say the person's name, and then right under it, I'll say, I know they like me. This is just my anxiety or something like that. Like whatever it is, like, or it could be, I know they don't like me, but my value is not found in if people like me or not. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's what I've just really had to do because I can't always, it's complicated for me sometimes to turn my brain off. Like when you're talking about anxiety, when you're talking about pure OCD, like sometimes it's hard for me to turn my brain off and like, and not go there, not go to that dark place, not think about that, not to think that sentence, not to be self-deprecating. It's really difficult and it's really challenging. So what I do is I just write it down and I acknowledge the fact that it's there. I'm not going to pretend like it's not there, but I also know that truth, that it's not always truth. And so I just write down what I am thinking. I write down what I am worried about. And then I write down the truth, or I'll say it out loud. I have no shame in talking out loud. I have no shame in being in the middle of Target and saying, that's not true. And I know that to some people that might be like, whoa, little girl, like you can't just walk around Target talking to yourself. I'm not running around Target loudly going, that's not true. You know, I'm not doing that. But I am choosing to acknowledge what truth is. So I know what my thoughts are and I know what truth is. And I have to choose to let truth be the final, let truth have the final say. Irish Cal 13 says, what symptoms would one have to exhibit to be diagnosed with anxiety? I feel like there's a difference between having anxiety and being diagnosed with it. I didn't burp. Sorry. I'm a lady. Being diagnosed / being able to say, I have anxiety, but I've never had anyone actually explain what classifies it. Yeah. So again, I'm not a doctor. But there are definitely times in life where you can like, even for someone with anxiety, and I wanted to include this question, even though I'm not a doctor, I wanted to include it specifically for this reason. There are times in life where even I, as someone with anxiety, diagnosed at 11 years old, I have to acknowledge that certain things that I go through have nothing to do with my diagnosis. And that is a really difficult thing to acknowledge. That's a difficult thing to understand and a very difficult thing to differentiate. And I want to leave a link to a sermon series in the description box below. I think it could be really helpful for a lot of people, whether you're a churchgoer or not. Please check out the sermon series. My dad's a pastor, and there are literally like two pastors that my dad has ever like really followed and like bought a lot of their books. And so it's one of those two pastors. And so, yeah, this sermon series was really helpful because it was talking about anxiety and stress and worry. And the church I was in was had a satellite sermon being sent to like multiple campuses, like thousands of people. And I'm sitting in there going, there's no way that all these people are diagnosed with anxiety, but all these people are in here getting freedom from talks about anxiety. And it was really helpful for me. I don't know why I'm keep pointing my finger, but it was really helpful for me because I was able to see the difference of like, what is something in my character when I'm choosing to be anxious, you know, where the Bible says, don't be anxious about anything. And then the differentiation of what is me being an actual chemical imbalance causing me to have anxiety about an irrational fear or something irrational. And so, yeah, I think the diagnosis would probably lend itself to being a little bit more on the irrational side, something that could be differentiated from truth. Whereas general anxiousness that someone that's not diagnosed maybe would experience, something that is like being anxious about something that is true. But that's very broad and I'm not a doctor and please don't hold me to that. That was just a random little thought and there's so much more where that thought came from and I'm not going to dig into all of it now. Ann_H.K1. Okay, girl. She says, what do you do when your anxiety is really bad? Oh, okay. So yeah, so I already feel like I kind of answered a little bit, but I do, again, stay tuned at the end because I do want to share this list of practical daily like coping things that I do that are really helpful for me. Morgan Jane 2004 says, how do you deal with suicidal thoughts? So I'm not going to dwell too much on this one because I don't know really everything to say, but I will say that if you are struggling with this, I've struggled with this in the past, please, please, please reach out to someone right now. Turn this video off, turn this podcast off. I'm leaving some stuff in the show notes in the description of the video of the podcast episode where you can have access to phone numbers that you can call, people that you can reach out to. Please just, this world needs you, and like, just like, please reach out to someone, right away. But Kill Your Treasure 01 says, what is the best thing for your family to do when you're fighting a moment of extreme anxiety? My sister has anxiety and I'm not always sure how to help. You know, I think this is a question that is, could be really difficult for you to ask your sister, but I think it would be really important for you to ask your sister. A few years for me and my sister to really develop like what I need and like what makes sense in those situations. But yeah, one thing for me is when I'm really, really, really stressed out, and maybe this will help answer Anne's question too. When I'm really stressed out, if I'm having a panic attack, if I feel like I'm on my way to a panic attack, I personally, benefit from quiet and I benefit from isolation. With that being said, it's not healthy for me to go into extended periods of isolation. So something that my family is kind of aware of and that we just kind of do, we've talked about it, I guess, but also I think it's just something that we just kind of do. I kind of will have like isolation that's not really isolation. Like I'll be in the room with someone and I'll just be like, I need quiet. And like, we'll just be in the room together and it's quiet, but it's, they're still there, but we're just not talking. And that can really help me calm down a little bit. Or I might say, I need 5 minutes in my room, but I'll go in my room and I won't close the door. And so they'll still be nearby, if that makes sense. So that's something that's been really helpful for me, is like finding a way to be by myself and like work on like calming down, or whatever it might be, but not allowing myself, please don't fully isolate yourself. Like, it's just, it's, unless your doctor tells you to do that, like, I would encourage you to not do that. MacFierce18 says, how have you been able to learn to control, sorry, I have dreads. If you're listening to the podcast and you don't know what's up, how have you been able to control anxiety attacks in public? One time I had a panic attack in IKEA. I was just in there. I was trying to buy a shelf and I just felt like I couldn't get out of the store. It's IKEA. It was a Saturday. It was a lot of people. I have sensory issues. And so sensory overload can be very difficult for me. So this actually happened in Times Square the first time I went as well. There were a lot of smells, a lot of sounds, a lot of people, a lot of visuals, a lot of colors, a lot of lights. And like, same thing with IKEA, same thing with Times Square. I've also learned that fluorescent lights are really triggering for me. So like Walmart, Target, IKEA, like you might find me with sunglasses on, not because I think I'm famous, but because the lighting can trigger me. And so, yeah, so it was really difficult. And what I did is I also had a panic attack at Disneyland on my birthday. Yay. I have actually started carrying headphones with me like 99.9% of the time. And I have a white noise machine in my Apple Music, and I have classical music in my Apple Music. And at Disneyland, that's what I did. I put the headphones on. I went into a bathroom stall and I just like tried to calm down there. At IKEA, I started like just like talking, like saying, like, it's okay. Everything is okay. You're going to get out. And I just put all the stuff that I was trying to buy, got out of the store, got in my car, called my mom on the phone, let her know what was going on, which is the whole isolation, not isolation thing, put it on speaker, and had a pretty rough cry breakdown in my car. But I'm glad that my mom was on speakerphone. I know that was really hard for her, and I hate that she had to sit through that, but I know that my mom was grateful that she was able to be supportive of me, even though she was down the street or at home or something. So anyways, yeah, I know that was like three different stories in one, but those are kind of like just some different things that I've done in my life to help if I'm having an attack in public. How do you get friends to understand anxiety in social settings, like birthday parties, concerts, etc.? My friends just don't get it, from Riley. Yeah, I mean, I would think, like, I don't mean this to sound negative, but I just want to say this so that your friends, like, so that just to cut your friends some slack, they might not ever get it. Like, people that don't have this, they're not going to ever understand exactly what it's like. I think just understand the friends that, like, don't try to so much get your friends to get it. Just say, like, hey, this is what I need from you. Like, if this happens, if I tug on your shirt 3 times in a row, can you help me get out? If I text you and say I need to go home, can you make sure I get home? Like, tell them what would be helpful for you. And if they're willing to do those things, then great. They don't have to get it. You see what I mean? They're still supporting you, even though they don't understand what you're going through. So if they're like laughing at you and they're like, oh, that's so dumb, anxiety's not real, like you're going crazy, then those aren't your real friends. And that's a different conversation. But yeah, I don't worry too much about trying to get people to get it, trying to get people to understand it. I was talking with my best friend Kristen about this. And if you go look on my Instagram, yesterday I posted this video of us, like, the week of the wedding, me, Kristen, and Hannah. My friend Kristen, like, we've been friends forever. And she's never seen me have a panic attack. She's, like, never really seen my Tourette go crazy. But, like, she knows, like, more about my life than, like, almost as much as my sister knows about my life. Like, Kristen and I are really close. So Kristen, like, she doesn't have to get it, but she knows how to support me. So if I'm talking to her about counseling or talking up to her about a panic attack, you see what I mean? She's supportive and she's there, but she can't write y'all a book about what it looks like because she don't know. So she's probably never going to get it per se. And that's okay. Like, that's doesn't make your friends like a bad person just because they'll never get it, if that makes sense. Guys, I keep like wanting to sit on my foot. Because, my parents' flight got delayed. I keep, like, wanting to sit on my foot, and then it keeps, like, falling asleep. Ow. There's so much going on right now. Okay. I tried to, like, sit my seat up. I need a nap. It's 8:51. Why do I need a nap already? Okay, now, this next category is all about Tourette syndrome and tics. So, fun little PSA. Every time I talk about it shows up. So that's a thing. Okay, we're just gonna try to jump through these so that I can jump to the next topic. Emily Newsiel, that was not Tourette's, that was just me not knowing how to read. She says, do you feel like it's a daily struggle, or has it become so normal to you now that you don't even notice it anymore? I would say yes. I mean, some days are better than others. Most days are pretty chill, but even on the days that are chill, if there was like a hidden camera in my house that people like saw me like twitching when it's just me and I'm really comfortable and I'm really relaxed and my guard is down, people, like, my version of chill, people would be like, I'm sorry. Like, I feel like she just was trying to do a dance move and she fell over. Like, what's going on? And I'd be like, no, this is a great day. Like, I'm really chill today. So, yeah, my version of normal is a very different version of normal to other people. When it comes to my OCD and my anxiety and different things that I've had to do to like create a normal for myself, like this dry erase board, it gets re-edited all the time. This horse calendar, I've had a horse calendar ever like for like 15 years, I think, something like that. And like, to some people that might be like, oh, that's a quirk. Like, some people have horse calendars all the time. When I tell you guys, it's not just me being quirky. Like, I have to have a horse calendar. And I, like, even though I'm kind of now even like making light of it, it's a very serious thing for me. And so it, like, it's just, I don't know how to really answer that question. Like, it's not so much a daily struggle because I've made it so much of my normal. Like, my home is such a safe place for me to be able to like let loose and really just be who I am. So I don't think that it's a daily struggle, but I think that if someone were to step into my life and ask me about all these little details of everything that I do, you know, like the volume on the remote control, it's always on a certain number for certain reasons. I have a really difficult time if it gets changed to the wrong number. And it's not like a funny difficult time, but it's like I could have a breakdown about it. And it's like when I'm watching a movie out with friends at someone else's house, I'm not going to be that way about it. But I've created this safe place in my own home to where to other people it might seem like a daily struggle, but for me it's very normal. And I'm aware of it, but it's just my normal. And that was a little bit of a OCD segue, but we'll talk about OCD more in a minute. Curly Gal V says, what tics do you struggle with now? And what tics did you struggle with at your worst? So that's a very popular question. It's nearly impossible for most people with Tourette syndrome to really tell you all of the tics. I mean, for most of us, you can just watch long enough. Most of us, we started out with, you know, something with like our hands and our neck, our head, and maybe some squeal noise, you know, like for most of us, we kind of started out with very simple motor tics and maybe one or two vocal tics. And that's, if you don't know what Tourette syndrome is, that's what it is. It's a neurobiological disorder characterized by tics, which are movements and sounds, movements and or sounds that you cannot control. So it's hard for me to really explain what they all are, but, essentially it's every one of my limbs, everything that can move does. And I don't necessarily have control over it. And I can't really explain to you what they all are. But I can say that the second half of your question, what tics do you struggle with at your worst, or did you struggle with at your worst? If you watch my video about the mouthpiece, I'm so grateful that, physically harmful tics are not prevalent anymore. I'm currently poking at myself, so you're probably like, really? You're not hurting yourself? Which, no, it actually doesn't hurt. I've gotten very used to random poking and stuff like hitting myself or stuff like that. Like, I was just, again, it's my normal. But I used to do a really bad, like, chest hitting twitch like that. You can't really see it on camera perfectly, but I'm really glad that my mouthpiece has really helped me diminish a lot of the very severe tics. That's so Amy says, have you been able to control your Tourette? A little bit earlier, what I was talking about with the suppression, trying to control my tics started, was with suppression, which is something that I should not do. With that being said, there are times where suppressing it is helpful, and it's not necessarily a bad thing to suppress my tics. Like, if I'm like driving a car, I can suppress my tics to drive a car safely. If I am having a day where I don't think that I can, then I just tell my husband or whoever I'm with, I can't drive right now. And thankfully the people that I know and love are very understanding of that. So I can control it to an extent, but at some point everything that I've suppressed is gonna show back up. So like today I drove for like 2 hours to get to LA and then I was at the hair salon for a while, and then I drove for those listening, that was not me farting. That was my mouth farting. Okay, that made it better. For like 2 hours and 40 minutes, I drove back home. So that was a lot of suppression. So now I'm at home. So it's a party. It's not really a party. That's just how I keep myself from going crazy, is from kind of being satirical with myself. Blind Ninja says, are there certain things that help or make your tics or symptoms worse or anything like that? Yeah, stress makes it worse. Not sleeping makes it worse. For me personally, eating too much sugar or drinking anything with too much sugar can make it worse. But at the same time, I don't like the taste of sugar. I think it tastes like Robitussin. And so I don't really have to worry about that too much. But yeah, so certain things can make it worse. Things that can make it better is just like, well, not being stressed, being well rested. I sleep way more than the average person, but at the same time, I never sleep. It's really hard to explain and really weird to explain. So yeah, like even like before I was pregnant, like I would like literally be exhausted all the time. And so like, that's another thing with pregnancy. I'm just like tired all the time. And then having Tourette's on top of it, I'm just like, ugh, because my body is just like tired from doing aerobics all day. So yeah, speaking of aerobics, fitness does help. Working out does help my tics. And that's one of the things that I'm going to mention later on when I talk about the kind of quick list bullet points of, yeah. So this tic showed up in like middle or high school, and it still happens a lot of times when I get nervous or excited, like good or bad stress. And it, I can't really explain it. It's like my throat is twitching. So it's like a stutter. Essentially. Yeah. So, yeah. So sometimes that happens. So if you're listening via podcast and you're like, dude, just spit it out. I can't. I'm trying, but it's just when I talk about my tics, they get like way worse. So yeah, I want to get through this category. Curly Gal V says, what would you do if you ever got pulled over by a cop and you kept ticking? Tourette's, you can't control it. And they continue to tell you to stop in a rude way, even after you tell them you can't and they pulled you over because a light was out. It seems like you may have gone through this, and I hate that for you because that sounds awful. That sounds terrible. I know for a while when I was in like, when I first started driving out on my own, I actually started wearing a medical ID bracelet. I don't wear it now, but if that's something that would be helpful for you, I would totally recommend it. And I would keep it on your left wrist, especially if you're driving, because then if a cop does happen to pull you over and does come up, like on that side, then it would be the closest thing. So that would be my recommendation. I know that I did have a really unfortunate situation. One time I got pulled over. I was living in Franklin, Tennessee, recording an album, and I got pulled over for having a Georgia license plate. I've never been one that was really like nervous around cops, just to be honest. My grandfather was a cop. I grew up in a small town where my dad was a pastor. So my mindset for cops was like, you know, they came to church and they all called my dad pastor. And so, I wasn't really nervous until he asked me about my license plate and I was confused. And then he said, why does your car smell like alcohol? And then I was confused even more. I've never had alcohol except for this one time, at a Lutheran church for communion. And, yeah. And so he asked me why my car smelled like alcohol. And I just told him I don't drink. And he said, he had my license. And he said, well, you're old enough to drink. Why don't you drink? And that's the reason for me personally, why don't drink? That's a conversation that I've never really had on YouTube or anything. So it's a really long answer. You know, it's like, it's so many different reasons, but one of them is because I have Tourette syndrome and I just don't know how I would react to it. I know there are people with Tourette that don't drink, but they're not me and I'm not them. So I just, or people with Tourette that do drink and I'm not them. They're not me. So I told the officer, I said, well, I have Tourette syndrome and yada, yada, yada. And then he started asking me so many questions about Tourette's. And when I talk about it, I tick more. So I started ticking. And it eventually ended with me, you know, going away. He said, I just got a warning for having the wrong license plate. We won't get into that conversation. But that was really scary. That was really intimidating to be right there ticking a whole lot. You know, it's kind of, I've also had the situations at TSA when you have to stand at that thing and they say, put your arms up. And like, you know, they do the scan at the airport. I'm perfectly fine until they say, don't move. And then I'm like, what? You know, it's like I become a different person. Like I start moving so much. Those situations are really difficult. And so, I mean, honestly, man, if it's really, really, really severe, just try not to really be alone. Honestly. I know some people with really severe anxiety have even gotten like support animals and stuff like that. But a medical ID bracelet, I would say, is just one piece of advice that I would give you. Magical Peach says, does it make it harder to do school or everyday life things? So I graduated from school a long time ago, but thank you. When I was in school, I was homeschooled for most of it, but I did go to some private school stuff. I went to public school for a little bit. And then I went to full-time college for 4 years and I graduated in 2012. I just recommend, again, with the whole part-time job, might become a full-time job, you really got to advocate for yourself. Try as best as you can, especially when it comes to college, to choose a school that's going to make accommodations for you. My school, Point University, they were very accommodating as far as like my testing and different things like that. So every person's different as far as what they need. But just make sure that you choose a school. If you can choose where you go, choose a school that has good accommodations. Kaylin before says, what would your advice be to someone diagnosed with Tourette's in their late teens? Also, what have you found is the best way to explain it to people? I usually just kind of tell people like, yeah, I have a tic disorder. It means I make tics that I have tics that I can't control. And then I usually will follow it up by, I probably can't answer all of your questions, but if you want, I could send you some blogs and stuff that I think are pretty cool. Usually if people are like, oh yeah, that'd be great, then those might be the people that I hang out with a little bit longer. But if people are like, nah, that's fine. Like if they really just wanted to ask me a bunch of like inappropriate questions, you can kind of weed them out pretty quick by telling them you'll send them a blog. If that's helpful at all, but, I feel like my husband is, he's watching like some basketball game. He's watching Thunder play against somebody. And I think a very intense basket was just made. And then what advice would I give to someone diagnosed in their teens? I mean, honestly, I would just say like, just know that it's okay to talk about it. Like, you don't have to talk about it with everybody. Again, like I said earlier, but find people that you can talk to. Don't try not to find just like one person that you gravitate to that they're your only human that you talk to. You know, try not to do that one. But try to find some people that you know are going to love you and support you no matter what. Even if they're a little bit awkward and they seem a little unsure as to how to talk to you back, like you're figuring it out. So of course they're going to be figuring it out for the first time too. So if that can be your parents, if that can be your siblings, your aunt, your uncle, your grandparents, your school counselor, a teacher, pastor, mentor, youth pastor, like just don't, I know that it can be so much more fun to be by yourself, but that's only going to be fun for so long. And just don't close yourself in your room too long. Cause I tried that, you know, I've dealt with depression as well. And I've tried the whole, let me just close myself in my room for a while. And I still struggle with that. It's a lot harder now cause I share a room with my husband and he's like, you're not going to close yourself by yourself all the time. I still love you. And I'm like, I appreciate you for calling me out on that. Cause it's so much easier to just close the door and just say, I want nothing to do with the world. Because the world can be a hurtful and heartbreaking place, but it was still created by the most incredible creator. And so please just don't lose sight of the fact that he still put people in your life there for you, and just try to fight the urge to not fight, honestly. Like the good fight. Okay, this is taking a turn. Next question, Aaron Engelbright says, how have you been able to handle as a teenager and how can you talk to your friends and family about it without feeling ashamed? I think I meant to put those two questions together. I did read these before. There's no need to feel shame for having Tourette syndrome. Like, this isn't your fault. You know what I mean? My parents know everything about my health because they've been walking with me through it. Like, I had pneumonia 7 times before I was 2 years old. I had asthma growing up. So my parents know more about my health journey than I do. But I remember that when I got my mouthpiece, which was not long ago, it was in my 20s. In that doctor's appointment, there are things that I talked to my dentist about in front of my parents that I'd actually never told my parents. And I felt so much shame. And I remember as I said those things, I looked over at my parents and like I was expecting to look over at them and they were going to be like mad or something like that. But this is something you can't control. Like, your parents shouldn't be mad at you. They might be hurt that you didn't tell them sooner. They might be hurt because they're confused and they don't know what they're doing. They've likely never gone through this before, but they likely won't be mad at you. And just try to remember that. Try to remember that if this is really new to you, it's probably really new to them too. And you guys are going to figure it out together. MinaMouse9 says, if we suspect our daughter deals with one or more of these issues, who do we take her to so she can be evaluated? Yeah, so pediatrician, if they can get you a referral. But I'd also say, like, don't be ashamed to, like, get all up in the mom groups, the mom forums, the Facebook groups, and all that stuff. And you know, find some people in your area that might recommend a neurologist or a counselor that's local. C. Reeve 1326, how can church be more accessible for people who have Tourette, as I know many people who struggle to go to church due to their tics? I would just say, like, again, this is a very case by case situation because some people have very loud vocal tics or very physically exhausting or physically expressive motor tics or physical tics. And so I would just say, like, if you're finding a church to go to in general is really hard and stressful and frustrating and annoying. But maybe if you can find a church that has like an email address of like a family's pastor or a pastor or, you know, a staff member or something, to send out a couple of emails before you go, if that makes you more comfortable. Or if you can go and then talk to someone after and say, is there someone where you feel more comfortable? You know, they may be able, I would presume and hope that churches were totally okay with someone being in the main sanctuary. Maybe they'll even offer the opportunity for your family to share a little bit about what Tourette's syndrome is like, if that kind of thing is needed. But also, say it's a young child or a teenager that's dealing with some insecurities right now and maybe isn't ready to be in the main sanctuary. They might have like a nursery or a family room where they can watch the service from as well. So I think there are definitely different options. Again, it's like that advocating thing. It's like when Tourette syndrome shows up in your life, it changes your life forever. We got to change with it and we got to work with it. Let's see. Natalie says, Sorry, Natalie. I think I already answered your question. Kelly says, how do you deal with the pain of repetitive tics? That actually. Sorry, I was like digging into my knee and then I was like, oh, how do I deal with this? This hurts. Very different things for different people. When I was little, I had a tic where I would ram my head into pretty much anything, the wall. Well, yeah, pretty much walls. And so it was when I was in the car, we had to take a pillow with us all the time so I didn't, you know, bust a window or something. I wore biker gloves as a kid because I would punch stuff all the time. And so fortunately, I don't have those tics anymore, thanks to my mouthpiece and not going through puberty anymore. I just had to make accommodations. My parents, unfortunately, I did physically injure them sometimes, and I'm grateful for their patience and support, and they chose to not make a big deal out of things. And as we've talked through things in my adulthood, my heart's been broken sometimes of knowing what they went through to not make a big deal out of stuff. But that's what parents do. And okay. We have a couple more categories to go through for my podcast listeners. Give me a second. I'm restarting my camera because this is like in 8,000 different categories. 8,000 different like folders or whatnot. So talking about OCD next. Caitlin LaRue, or I don't know how to say that, but she says, how does your OCD present? So yet again, that's kind of like asking how many tics do I have? It's a very difficult question to answer. Also just being honest, and I think that this isn't a practice that people should implement whether you're a public figure or not. I don't share the full details of all of my medical complexities, especially my triggers, because you can't trust everybody in the world. And so that's a hard question for me to answer because I don't answer all of those things. But I will say that it's essentially like, because I know some people say like, I'm so OCD because they're just struggling with wanting something to be a certain way. A lot of the things that I do struggle with, like for example, like the consistency of my calendar and always wanting the TV volume to be at like one of these 3 to 4 different things. And there's certain words that I use very often because I like the way certain letters roll off my tongue and things like that. Even with all of that stuff, other people might have those quirks as well. But the difference with me as having formal OCD is that oftentimes my brain can kind of function in a way that if these things don't come to fruition, that something bad is going to happen, that things are going to fall apart. So that's kind of the difference of just like having quirks versus needing things to be a certain way when it comes to OCD. Haley Davis says, what way does it come up and how do you avoid it? So one thing with my OCD that my mom told me when I was very young, and my parents are very accommodating people, so people might think that this sounds very harsh, but it's something that I'm very grateful for. And if our children do exhibit symptoms of OCD and do happen to be diagnosed at some point, I want to implement this as well as a parent. My mom told me, she said, you will always find a way to accommodate your OCD. I will always try to find a way to accommodate your OCD. The world will probably not try to accommodate your OCD. And so that was really helpful for me to hear at a very young age. She told me that as early as 11 or 12 years old. And I'm not saying that every parent needs to say that to their child right now when their kid gets home from school, but it was helpful for me to understand because she acknowledged that I have this struggle. She acknowledged that I'm always going to work hard and that she's always going to try, but she didn't want me to live in a world thinking that if I get a 9-to-5 job, then I'm able to tell my boss, oh, I'm sorry, I need XYZ because of my OCD. Now, even though a boss may be accommodating to that, they may not. And so I'm just grateful that I was kind of given that freedom. Now, at the same time, some people may not have very severe OCD, so that might not be relevant for them at all. But for me, it was very severe growing up. Like every little thing had to be in its place. Everything had to have a rhythm and a system. And if anything changed, I would have a meltdown or a breakdown, or I feel like I couldn't breathe and I feel like I couldn't function, I couldn't survive, and I didn't want to live anymore. And so I had to have an understanding that the world is not going to be the same way as it is at home. So I've essentially created different things at home that help me to restructure where my need to fix, and for lack of better words, control, where my compulsions to be obsessive, I've tried to restructure it in my home so that when I'm out of the home, I can try to suppress it as much as I can, even though I'm not always able to. But that way it just kind of home creates a safe space for me. One example was when I went to hotels, I had the need to sleep in a certain bed, and like if there were the two beds. And as I was getting older and starting to like do tours with other people, I was having a really hard time when I would go to the hotel room, and I was like, you know, had a roommate with another girl from another band or something, and she would choose the bed that I wanted. I couldn't sleep all night because she was in the bed that I wanted, or like whatever it was. And so I would literally like almost have a panic attack because I'm like, I needed that bed and you slept in it. And I don't, and now I can't talk to you because I'm scared you won't like me if I talk to you. And so my OCD is triggering my anxiety, which is triggering my Tourette's. And now I'm not going to get any sleep. And now I'm going to have to go perform tomorrow night with no sleep. And then I'm going to sign autographs for 2 hours for no sleep. And it's just like, it was just because it was taking over my life. And so in my late teens, early 20s, I started to kind of train myself to understand that home was my safe place. And I was going to have to try to find a way to manipulate my compulsions, if that makes sense. And so one of those things was when I traveled with my sister, I would specifically ask her, hey, can you pick a bed first so that I don't have control over this situation and I'm going to have to learn how to work myself through this. Now, some people are able to do that. Some people are able to do that with medication. Some people maybe would have just not been able to have that job. Everybody's different. But that's just something that I had to start doing for myself because there were certain things in life that I wanted to do. Like I said, medication was helpful for me for a period, like in my early 20s, it was helpful. But then there was a period where it was not helpful, where I did not want it. And so I just had to choose. I could either quit this job, go back on the meds, or I could try to work to find ways to grow through it. And I guess I chose the latter. It doesn't mean that my OCD is completely eradicated. When I'm home, things are still the way that I need them to be to a certain extent. But yeah, that's what growth looks like. Ray and Jean says, what were your most successful treatments and ways to manage OCD? Oh, I think I meant to put those two questions together. And then I'm going to give you guys the list in like literally like maybe 10 minutes. I don't know. Okay. Meech Peach says, I have OCD and I was curious, how have you gotten through life being okay with how things are and not always trying to make everything perfect, controlling the anxiety? Very much similar to the anxiety answer, is just speaking out loud to myself. I kind of will challenge myself sometimes. Like, Sorry, one thing that I was really into when I was little, well, I still kind of am, organization of shelves and cabinets is very important to me. I reorganized our pantry yesterday for the second time this month. And I just, it's something that I just need to do. It's something that I've always had to do. It's an obsession, it's a compulsion, and I've always had to do it. When I was little, we used to shop at this store called Ross. And I would go, and I don't know if you've ever seen a store like Ross, but sometimes like their DVDs or their book area just can be a little bit, everything's kind of everywhere because a lot of people have looked at it throughout the day. So a thing that I started doing when I was younger is while my mom was shopping, I would stand there and I would reorganize the entire DVD shelf. I would either do it alphabetically or color-coded or by genre or all three. And sometimes it would take me like 30 minutes. My mom would be done shopping and she would come up and be like, "Hey, Jamie, I'm done." Or sometimes she would, so sweet, she would stand there and let me do it for an extra 10 or 15 minutes. It got to the point where the manager said that I needed a job there, but I was only 12. And so she instead would just like give me a soda. And which is like the best thing to give a child that's letting her OCD go crazy. Like, "Here's some caffeine. Thank you. Come back tomorrow." So anyways, with that being said, that has not changed about me. It kind of became a trend. Anybody's house that I would go to, they would be like, "Hey, Jamie, do you want to organize the fridge?" I still love that. You can honestly, and I hate that I'm admitting this, if I ever come to your house and you ask me to organize your pantry or your refrigerator, I will 100% do it. I don't care how messy it is. That is like my joy, to organize pantries. Like, I love doing that. I love putting together furniture. Anything that has like rules. Oh, I love rules. Yeah, if you like the Enneagram, I'm a 7, but I'm a 1 in stress, go figure. So yeah, I love rules and I just love organization. I love details. I love details. I will ask 1,000 questions at any restaurant we go to. I want to know if you have cheese fries. I want to know what kind of cheese, what color is the cheese? Does the cheese run? Is it like sticky? Is it gooey? I need to know everything at all times. And I don't remember what I was talking about. Oh yeah. So a way that I've started to challenge myself is when I'm out at stores and something's really unorganized that I really want to organize, I will sometimes, not all the time, because most of the time I stand there and reorganize it, but a lot of times I will walk by it and I will say out loud to myself, "You're going to be okay. You're not going to touch it. You're not broken. You don't have to," like whatever it is I have to say to myself. And again, I know that the OCD is still happening in my brain, like that like need to fix it, that need to make it perfect, that compulsion that's telling me to obsess over it for 4 to 5 hours. It's still there, but I'm choosing to let truth be the loudest voice I hear. I'm choosing to let truth have the final say. And sometimes when I get home, I sit there and I'm still thinking about that gravy packet that was sitting there next to the yellow rice at the grocery store. And I still think about it. And I know to some people it might sound really silly, but to me, it's almost to the point where I can't sleep because I'm thinking about it. So I just have to choose to remind myself, to speak it to myself. It is okay. You're not going to fall apart. And yeah, so that's honestly like what I've had to do, is just a lot of affirmations and a lot of speaking truth over my life. Sydney Ann says, "What do you struggle with most in terms of OCD? Does it bother you when you're out in public a lot?" Yet again, I meant to put those two questions together. Okay, the last one, well, as far as diagnoses, is ADHD. Shane Draw Smith says, "How do you deal with forgetfulness and establishing routines with your ADHD? And how do you deal with focusing on tasks that weren't as fun or lengthy?" Yeah, that's a really difficult one still for me. I mean, I have, I remember once in pertaining to OCD and ADHD, I said on a podcast that I have a lot of dry erase boards around the house, and someone hit me up like on Messenger or DM or something, and they said that they didn't like that I said that because it gave a bad representation, because OCD and ADHD is so much more than that. And yeah, it is, but for me, that's such a crucial part of it. I mean, this calendar is such a crucial part of my survival. My notes on my phone, there's so many different categories, so many different emojis, so many different folders. This dry erase board gets recreated every few days, and it really is what helps me function. I say all the time, like, I don't want my phone to hear me and get distracted, but I say all the time, like, "Hey Siri, remind me at 3 p.m. to XYZ. Like, all the time, am I saying that? Establishing routines. I work for myself. And so that can be really difficult. Essentially, I work for myself because I'm independent and stuff. And that can be really difficult because there's no set timeline. There's no set, you know, rules. There's no set structure. So I've got a schedule for myself that's on my bathroom mirror of when to record my podcast, when to do X, Y, Z. And because it's just what helps me, you know, writing down the vision and making it plain all over the house is what has helped me function and thrive since I was a little kid. It started with post-it notes somewhere in high school or college, and then it's graduated to dry erase boards and calendars and notes in my phone. And that's what's really helped a lot. As far as dealing with things that aren't as fun or lengthy, I think that honestly attributes to my parents. Like my parents, again, they wanted me to understand that yes, we acknowledge that this is a diagnosis that you have, and we're not at all going to try to get you to change who you are. As far as like you're struggling with this, we're not going to tell you to pretend like you're not struggling with it. But they did want me to understand that if there were certain things that I wanted in life, I was going to have to find a way to work through some of my challenges, whether that was going to be medication or counseling or whatever that was going to be. They wanted me to understand that. And so, I couldn't have the job that I have if I was completely ADHD and I just chose to say, well, oh, it's my ADHD, I can't help it. You know what I mean? Like even with my Tourette and my tics, like I can't choose to, you know, like say sometimes I have had tics where my arm will flail outward, right? And I don't have the liberty to sit there with kids and I'm signing autographs and to just, you know, karate chopping kids and just say, oh, well, I have Tourette's, you're just going to have to get over it. It's like, at some point I have to realize, okay, what am I going to do to try to manage this so that I can step into what I want to do? So there are parts of my job that are not very fun. There are parts of my job that are very lengthy. I spend way more time sending emails and rereading proposals and going through contracts with my attorney and my manager than I do singing. And it stinks and it's hard and I get very distracted. I know even someone else says something about like, how do I pay attention in church? Bruh, I don't know. It's hard. But it's something that I want. So I work hard for it. And that was somebody in Art Van or something that specifically said about paying attention in church. Like, how do I do that? And how do I pay attention in conversations? I mean, that is really challenging for me. I try really hard. I do a lot of tapping when I'm trying to pay attention. I'll tap here, I'll tap on the table, I'll tap on my leg, because it's really helpful for me to kind of develop rhythms because music is really helpful for me. And so developing a rhythm or a beat is really helpful for me. Paying attention in church. I mean, I take journals with, when I was in high school, I would have gel pens, like all these different colorful pens and stuff, for those of you who don't know what gel pens are. And I would have like 12 different journals and I would be drawing a full comic strip of what the sermon was about. And people are like, you're writing down everything the pastor's saying. You're drawing a ton of pictures. Like, just write down the key points. I'm like, I can't write down the key points. I have to write down the pastor was at the right point of the pulpit when he talked about John 3:14, because that's helpful for me to know that he was at that part of the pulpit. Because if I didn't write that down, I'm not going to remember what he was talking about. And so it's just figuring out what works for me and choosing to work really hard. Again, it's a part-time, if not full-time job to advocate for yourself and to figure out all of the quirks and intricacies of your condition and your brain, whether you have a condition or not. I put in a lot of work to try to figure out what I need and what makes sense for my life. And it's a thing you got to do, man. It's tough, but it's worth it. Kara SW16 says, the stigma of ADHD is real. So many parents struggle with how best to handle things with med, school, social, emotional, etc. How did your parents approach the ADHD aspect of your journey? I think I just kind of unintentionally answered a little bit of that question. I mean, they were very sensitive and patient for sure. But they were very much pro the mindset they're very pro the mindset of like, you will always find a way to accommodate this. We will always try. The world may not. And so, and I don't even know if those were the exact words they used, but that was just the way that was what was expressed in their actions. And so they worked really hard to make sure that I had what I needed. And I think I do think that I had a little bit of an advantage. I mean, I think all of us, to some different extent in our lives, we grew up with some sort of privilege. And I do think that I had a privilege of like having parents who were pastors and who were pastoral counselors. They didn't have really any knowledge of my diagnosis, like my stuff, until I was diagnosed with it. But as far as like just being patient and loving and intentional, that was just a huge part of how they built their family and how they built their ministry. And so I think that I did grow up with an advantage in that area, just to be honest. And I'm really grateful for that. But yeah, I think as parents, like, and I know there's another mom too, that said, being a mom to 12-year-old with ADHD and anxiety, what advice do I have for a parent? Things to say, not to say, Miss Super Donkey. And she was asked, you know, kind of asking that question. It's like, as parents, I think the best thing that you can do is like love and support your kids, and create a safe place for them, and create a home for your children, because the world will likely not, well, the world won't know how to love them like a parent will. And there will be many times where there were many times where I went out into the real world and I was bullied, and I was mocked by friends, and I was not understood by teachers and professors, and I wasn't always shown grace and mercy and love. But I always knew that I had my parents, at the end of the day, and I always knew that I had their support and their love, and that just meant the world to me. Now I want to share with you guys kind of my list of like practical daily coping things, that have really gotten me through all of my stuff. So one is playing piano. I think all kids need to grow up with a piano in the home. That's a tip from my mom that I'm passing on to you guys. All kids need a piano, whether they can play it or not. Just please get them a little keyboard or something. Kickboxing is really great. Rock climbing. I love this little baby that I'm growing, but that is like, I already told my husband, I was like, that's one of the first things when I'm not pregnant anymore, I'm going to go back to rock climbing. Listening to music is another one. Sitting in intentional and not isolated silence. I talked about that earlier. Attending church. So yeah, that's really good for me because it's just like really calming and peaceful. And it's just, I love taking notes because it really kind of, it's really hard to not get distracted all the time, but continuing to put myself in places with structure helped me to just just keep those wheels spinning of structure. So attending church is great for many reasons for me. Setting goals for the week. So I try to answer the question, what can I do? Because it's really easy for me to sit and think of what I can't do and what I'm not capable of. So answering the question, what can I do? Checking in with my mentors, counseling, managing sleep, being conscious of my diet, stretching morning and night, singing certain lines. So like there's just certain songs that I always sing. Like there's just one old song. It's called Enter This Temple by Leland. And I would literally just walk around singing Father, Enter This Temple, the same line over and over again. But it's just very positive. And I don't know, it's just really helpful for me. It just like, yeah. So there's different songs like that where I literally would just sing one line over and over when I'm really stressed out. Repeating my daily affirmations. Making lists is really great for me. Dreaming is really good. Planning, tapping, and humming. So those are like my main things that are really helpful for me on a day-to-day basis when it comes to anxiety, Tourette syndrome, OCD, ADHD, ADHD, and depression, and just mental health in general. So for those of you listening to my podcast, if you just give me just a second, I'm restarting on my camera. And now I'm going to talk about the final category, which is faith and mental health. I'm a Christian. I was raised as a Christian, but I also have chosen my faith for myself. I'm really passionate about my faith. For those of you that don't know, I'm a singer-songwriter full-time, and a lot of my songs are about my faith journey. They're songs to God, about my relationship with God, and things like that. So I'm going to answer some questions about faith and mental health. Every Thought Captive says, how do you differentiate between something that is a spiritual issue or scent issue versus something that is simply anxiety or an OCD issue. Yeah, I kind of mentioned this a little bit earlier, but there are times where I have to acknowledge, like, is this something that is my character where I need to change it from a spiritual kind of inside out perspective, or is this something that is anxiety or OCD? Again, remaining really open and honest with mentors and stuff like that is really good. But my counselor is really, really helpful for something like that, because, it's just like she has the perspective of understanding the mental health side of things, but also she is a Christian counselor, so she understands the faith side of it as well. And I had a counselor back in Georgia that I really liked, not to like compare the two or anything, but they're both really great. But my counselor in Georgia, like, I remember there were actually a few times where she would say, "Now that I could tell you, sounds like a heart issue." And that was really helpful that she actually called me out on that, because it helped me to not, allow anything in my life to be a crutch and for me to be able to see things that could be changed and how. Caitlin LaRue says, "If you have things like intrusive thoughts, how do you remind yourself that it's not real and that God is still in control?" And yeah, I would say that kind of the same thing I was saying earlier about like the journaling and writing down notes and stuff like that. Of just being able to write down, like, you know, my mind says this, but the word of God says this, you know? So that is really difficult. I'm not going to lie, but just putting in the work, just actively putting in the work. And if you're really, really struggling with those thoughts, just tell someone, talk to someone, and don't struggle with it alone. Rue Montek says, "I don't suffer from anything like this, but because I know someone who does, what would you tell them if they said, 'Does God hear my prayers? If so, why doesn't he answer them? And why do I have to go through this?'" You know, I've definitely thought that many times, and I've said that many times. I've had prayers where I'm like sitting down with my hands folded and I'm like, "Hey, Jesus, we're friends." And then I've had prayers where I've been like screaming, and, you know, I've like sat in my garage and turned up the music and just cried and screamed for, you know, a while, just praying and just been like, "God, you don't care," and stuff like that, because it is frustrating and it is confusing. And I want to make sure, like, you guys obviously know this, but I want to make sure that I say I'm not God. And so I can't answer the question, why do we have to go through this? You know, I can't answer the questions of which prayers is he going to answer, which isn't he going to answer. But I can most definitely, tell you guys is that when I read the word of God, and when I pray, and when I talk to the Lord, and when I'm just in those moments, like, one thing that I'm continuously reminded of is heaven and how beautiful heaven is going to be. And I don't say this to promote my music, but if you like, you can listen to my song Heaven. And I'm actually, for the podcast, I'll actually put Heaven, I'll put part of it at the end of the podcast episode and you can listen to it. But heaven is amazing, and heaven is perfect, and heaven is going to be a place where there is no crying and no fear and no sickness and no depression and no cancer and no Tourette and no kidnapping and no sin and no sickness. So, like, no, like, heaven is going to be perfect, right? Heaven is perfect. And so, like, I have to remind myself that heaven and earth can't be the same thing, because then what are we living for? Like, heaven and earth can't be the same thing, because then what are we waiting for? Like heaven is different than earth. And on earth we have struggles. If you read through the Bible, you can read through so many people that went through things, that had troubles, that had problems. And yes, of course, like, you can also look through the Bible and see incredible miracles. And I believe that you can even see miracles now. Like, I've seen so many people's lives change through healing and through, you know, just so many beautiful things. And so I believe in miracles, and I believe in God healing us and all that stuff for sure. But I also believe that because we live in an imperfect world, that there is weeping and there's crying and there's pain. And a part of my journey through that pain and through that weeping, so much of it has allowed me to have a better relationship with God, if that makes sense. At many times it's made it really difficult for me, just to be honest, but it's allowed me to have a relationship with God where I understand that I can't go through this alone, that I can't be by myself, that I have to lean on someone, depend on someone, and trust in someone that knows way more than I do, that has a better understanding of anything that I do. I could seriously talk about this all day because it's such a difficult thing to talk about and process. But at the same time, like even in this present moment, I guess, there are times where it's just so natural for me to just talk about how good God is, even in the moments where I'm like, God, why haven't you answered this prayer? Why haven't you healed me physically of Tourette syndrome? I'm like, but look what God has done in spite of me having Tourette syndrome. You know what I mean? Like, if I didn't go through what I went through as a kid, like, I just look at like all these people that are going through stuff too, that are like sending me these questions. Like, I didn't even get to all these questions. There are so many questions from like kids that feel isolated and that feel alone. So many comments from kids that were saying things like, Jamie Grace, because of your story, I now know that I'm not alone. Because of your story, I now have hope that maybe I can be a singer one day, or that maybe I can live out my dreams. Or I didn't know that people with Tourette syndrome could do anything or could be somebody until I saw your story. And so I think about, if I had been given this perfect life, no, granted, God does not need me to do anything. He can, I mean, God could use a rock to do something cool if he wants to. God's not sitting up in heaven going, oh, I hope Jamie Grace wakes up so I can do some cool work. But with that, he chooses to use me. Yeah. And so I think if my life had been perfect, like, dang, I wouldn't get to be an example to other kids. I wouldn't get to be an example to other women that are going through anxiety or depression or things like that. You know, I did a really brief little thing on my Instagram story the other day about how I was having a very physically healthy pregnancy, but I kind of touched on how mentally it's been difficult just as someone that struggles with anxiety and panic attacks and being pregnant. And y'all, the amount of messages that I got from pregnant women, I don't even know that many pregnant women followed me. Like, the amount of pregnant women that messaged me and said, I literally never knew that anybody else was going through depression during pregnancy. Or people always talk about like postpartum depression, but nobody talks about it while they're pregnant. Or I thought I was alone in this. Or I just told my husband this and I don't know if he understands, but now I know that someone does. And so it's like, there are times where I'm like, God, why can't life be easier for me? But then I'm like, who am I to ask? Why can't I choose, to maybe say, carry this burden, because there's so many people carrying so many burdens. What if I just chose to walk with them and carry my part too? You know what I mean? Instead of just being like, hey, God, you want to fix my life? Which, let's be real, I've said that many a times. but I've learned so much, and I've been blessed to be able to love on so many people through their hurt and through their pain and through their fears. I know that what I'm going through is not in vain. So whether God chooses to heal me today or tomorrow or when I do get to heaven, I know that he's done a work in my life in spite of what I've gone through. So I don't know how he chooses which prayers to do what about. I don't know what his plans are necessarily. And I don't know why I always have to go through stuff, but I am able, at most times, able to see the beauty in what he's doing. Even, like, I wrote a song once that said, I wrote it to a friend whose son does not have a very long life expectancy. And I wrote it to her and I said, you may feel pain, but it's not as great as his name. And I know that can be so cheesy. It's like, oh, look, you rhymed some words. But it's like, and even in all the pain that we face, like, God is still so good. And he's still so great. I think about my mom and dad, like, so, okay, so, like, God, right? So we see him as like God the Father. So it's like a parent-child relationship in a way. And this is not a perfect analogy. I'm just obsessed with analogies. So I think about my parents. And like when I was younger and they like, you know, say, you can't go here. You're not listening to this music. You're not watching the show, whatever it was. It just kind of felt like, okay, my parents are just like doing this because they're my parents and they just want to tell me what to do. Okay, whatever. But as I got older, I was able to look back and see the intention behind why we didn't watch that or why we didn't go there or why I didn't wear that. I was able to see why they had me go through certain things or they kept me from certain things. Because as my parents, they know way more than I do. So my relationship with God, in a way, is like that. It's like, as I get older, I'm able to look back and I'm able to see like, wow, that's why I went through that. You know, like I understand it to a different extent now. And I understand that as my father, you either knew I could handle it or you were just going to make sure that you walked with me while I tried to handle it. And if I could trust that you're always there, then I can understand that sooner than later. So yeah. Knicks Kind 01 says, have you ever, oh, I have to sneeze so bad. She said, have you ever asked God for healing? If so, did it sometimes make you doubt that you were not healed? I've been asked that question a lot. Again, I don't know when my tread is going to go away, today, tomorrow, or heaven. But I think the word healing is really interesting because I think a lot of times we can put so much focus and we almost glorify physical health. We glorify healing of the body. We kind of glorify it, I think, too much, to be honest. And I just had to acknowledge that, like, even if I'm not particularly healed from Tourette syndrome exactly while I'm on this earth. Like, what has God done in my life, you know? Like, not taking for granted the things that he has done. Because it's like, I have Tourette syndrome, and yeah, that sucks. And I'm not trying to, like, Jesus juke anybody, but, like, I think about, like how many, like, young women prayed for like their parents to just love each other and their parents to create a healthy home. You know what I mean? So it's like, I had like, just being honest, I think I had like one of the best childhoods in the world. So it's like, yeah, I have my struggles, but like God gave me these parents that are like everything to me. And so I have these days where I complain about everything to Jesus. Don't get me wrong. But I don't want to be that person that looks around and says, God, you gave me parents that love me. You gave me a roof over my head my whole life. You gave me a sister that's my best friend. You gave me a father who's a pastor but's never had a scandal. You gave me a mother who was a homeschool mom but was never controlling. Like, you gave me all these incredible things in life. But I have a health condition. You see what I mean? It's like I look at the stuff in my life that other people might be praying for, and I'm like, oh, dang, I got a lot out of this. I got blessed very tremendously. And yeah, I go through stuff that stinks. Don't get me wrong. But I'm blessed in a lot of ways, and so I just try to acknowledge that. Zoe Heather says, how has it affected your life as a whole? And what have you learned from dealing with it all these years? What are some positives that you've been able to find through it? Again, I did not burp. I'm a lady. So also I'm pregnant. That's the baby. So, yeah, it's taught me resilience. It's taught me how to bounce back. Like when I feel like I can't anymore. I had a moment pretty recently where I was talking to my mom and I was done with all the things. And I just told my mom, I was like, I'm done. I just don't want to be here. I'm done. I'm too sick. I can't. And my mom, she started like going through, like she verbalized everything that I've been through. She talked about all of my hospital visits and all of the bullying and all of the stuff that I've gone through since I was a baby. And she went through all of that. And she was like, are you not that girl? Like, did you just stop being that girl? Are you not resilient anymore? And it wasn't pushy. It wasn't too much. Everybody has a different relationship with their mom. It was what I needed because it reminded me, like, I'm strong. Like, don't get me wrong. I've got a lot of flaws just in general as a human. But I'm strong. Like, my strength, like having Tourette syndrome has made me so strong. And so I'm really grateful for that. I've learned how to understand differences. I've been in situations with friends where we're like out in public and someone that's disabled, severely disabled might show up and people get nervous and they jump and they might laugh, they might snicker. And when you grow up in the hospital, like you see someone that's severely disabled and you're like, oh, that looks like my roommate from fifth grade. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I understand people's differences in a different way, in a normal way. And I'm really grateful for that. But yeah, so those are all the questions that I'm able to answer today. This is almost 2 hours long. This is like the longest thing that I've ever put out on the interwebs when it comes to my personal life situation. But I do want to thank you guys for watching or listening. I really do appreciate it. I hope you have a beautiful Easter weekend. Jesus is so alive. He is, I've said that so weird, but he is. And I cannot wait to go to church and celebrate. It's going to be a wonderful weekend. Thanks for listening. You can find me on social media at Jamie Grace H. If you want to subscribe to this podcast, there's new episodes every weekend. On Sundays, we do a proverb study because we just going deep and it's real good. If you want to subscribe to my YouTube channel, click the little bell so you get notifications every time a new video is made. Thank you for watching this video. The love and support, it's unreal. And I'm very grateful. I love you guys much. I'll see you soon. I miss you already. Bye. And for my podcast, okay, bye.